Terry Goodtrack is the president and chief executive officer of AFOA Canada, based in Ottawa. He was the chief operating officer at the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, where he oversaw the financial management of an agency worth over $500 million under its control. Terry has spent over 20 years in senior management positions with high-profile Aboriginal organizations. He has made important contributions to Aboriginal finance, governance, and leadership. He's played a central role in some of the best-run organizations out there. That's in my opinion. Holding himself and his staff to the highest standards, he's the president and CEO, or rather, he was president and CEO of the Indigenous Gaming Regulations Incorporated, and assisted in the development and implementation of jurisdiction over First Nations gaming in the province of Saskatchewan. He was also chief financial officer of the Federation of Saskatchewan Indian Nations, the FSIN, and chief financial officer of the Assembly of First Nations many years ago. He's also my go-to financial wizard. Terry, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Wayne.
You're welcome. So I got this idea because it was that time of year when people were making New Year's financial resolutions as well as other kinds. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice to check in with Terry and to get some thoughts on finance? But before we launch into that, tell us about AFOA Canada, what it does, who it does it for, and why it's important.
I guess I'll start out with the importance part, because back in the 90s, there was this, I would call it a movement, a grassroots movement among Indigenous communities to improve finance and management in the communities. And the focus initially was on financial management. And the idea was to create a certified program that would improve people's skills and knowledge set. So we, the semi-First Nations at the time, partnered with the Certified General Accountants of Canada and sort of developed this concept of an Aboriginal Financial Officers Association. We've subsequently, over the years, we've modified that name, and we're just known as AFOA Canada now. And the reason why is because we've broadened our certifications from financial management to general management, which is senior administrators, as well as now elected leaders. So we had to ensure that people could see themselves in the name. So we've retained the acronym AFOA Canada and dropped the words, and because the our corporate name is well known in the communities. You know, our vision is the Center of Excellence in Management, Finance, and Governance. And when you think of our mission, I guess the short version of this is that we're building a community of professionals in these areas, right, to move our communities from what I call the management of poverty to the management of wealth, which has many different connotations.
Yeah, there are many different definitions of wealth. Different people can look at it in different ways. You're focused on governance, management, finance professionals, but of course you and I both worked at the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, and it was very clear to us what the relationship was to having some basic acumen in running programs and institutions, and how that related to larger things like healing and developing healthy communities. I mean, it was a central piece of that. So how did you end up in finance yourself? Because I don't know if this is still the case. I think it is, but it's been hard to recruit Indigenous people into finance because we have a tendency to go into things for obvious reasons like social work or healthcare. Finance seems to be a bit lower on the list for a lot of folks, and they don't necessarily realize just how many opportunities and jobs there. How did you end up working in finance?
Well, I think, you know, my undergraduate degree is, I have an accounting degree, the Bachelor of Business Administration. And I think, you know, I would probably say, you know, the numbers really is something that I've always enjoyed doing, is working with numbers. And because I think there's a lot of surety and coming, you know, as the numbers come out to, you know, so the equation comes out to one answer and so forth, as opposed to many different answers, I guess you could say. so I kind of, you know, enjoyed sort of, you know, sort of the math, the, you know, the surety around it, I think. And then, you know, once you kind of got out of university and went into the workforce, you know, a lot of my, I guess you could say the positions that I held were very financial related, whether that's auditing, whether that's, you know, accounting operations, you know, financial and auditing policy, you know, things like that. And then obviously, moving on to a CFO position. So they've, you know, I guess you could say I've kind of grown into the different positions in finance, and now obviously more into senior management, because I think you need a really strong financial management sort of acumen to be able to undertake a lot of senior management responsibilities nowadays.
A lot of people say they'd like to be better with finances, especially in the new year, and they're making resolutions, but they don't know what that really means or even where to begin. What do you tell people in that situation?
Well, you know, when people ask me, when I've been asked about this, and is I think it's important to link goals to what you're doing. You know, what are the goals that you're trying to achieve to begin with? Is it, are you trying to buy a car, a house? Are you saving up for education? Are you saving up for a trip? Like, what are your goals, both short term and long term? And then I think once you kind of clearly establish that, then the question becomes, how do you get there? And it's important to track your funds. And I do it for a month. People say 2 weeks, but I would do it for a month. Track every expense that you do. And then take a look at it and analyze it, because the way that you spend your money is actually what your current priorities really are. And if those goals don't, if it's not matching up to the goals that you want to save for, then you've got to do some adjustments. And you've got to also realize that all of the choices that you've made is all up for discussion in terms of curbing expenditures and moving those expenditures to other areas. So I think you know, a better understanding of what your goals are and tracking your expenses are key.
I can imagine people listening thinking, well, you know, what's the point really? I mean, don't you have to have a lot of money to save or invest or plan for the future? What can some schmuck like me do who doesn't have lots of money to start building this better financial future? I mean, how do you address that?
Hey, you know, there's many different ways. I mean, when you see some of the statistics and what they say on, I guess, more on the news, is a lot of people live paycheck to paycheck and that kind of thing, right? But there's a lot of choices on expenses that you can make adjustments on. You know, just becoming, I guess, better acquainted with the products and services that companies offer. As an example, this is kind of a trite example, but it makes the point. Let's talk insurance. So, you know, sometimes we're overly insured. We're paying too much for insurance, whether our house insurance, car insurance, and so forth. You know, and by just making an adjustment there, you could save money. You know, you raise your deductible. As an example, that certainly saves you money. If you have a cell phone plan, it's going back and calling the cell phone company and getting a better rate. Take some time to do this, but you know, it's not. I think as Canadians overall, we're too acceptable. When a company offers us something, we're too readily to accept it, and we've got to be able to get into a more challenged sort of framework in terms of getting the best negotiated rate for us. So I think it's kind of going line by line and really thinking about, you know, is this something that I can change as opposed to being an absolute fixed cost? And obviously in things like groceries and so forth, there's, you know, like what we do is, you know, not necessarily always shopping at places like Loblaws, you know, there's other grocery stores that are much, much more affordable. That's what a person can shop at, and that kind of thing, I think. So that's some of the stuff you can do, but it's going line by line and seeing where you can make these adjustments. And I think, you know, one of the you know, things that that I've heard, you know, about this idea of saving is you can't build wealth if you can't save, right? So So it's important to realize that, right? So, and when you actually do have some savings, it's not then subsequently thinking of, well, what's the next thing I can buy or what the trip I can go on, right? Like, what am I actually, what are my goals? Whether that be, you know, saving for, to be more resilient in terms of the possibility of losing a job or that kind of having a, what to call a rainy day fund. So what are these goals, right?
Now, assuming somebody does get a bit of savings, I mean, are you somebody who invests in stocks or bonds or things like that? What are, do you have any thoughts on those kinds of options?
Well, I think, I mean, it's interesting because I think you, at that point in time, you need to really think about some of the vehicles that exist out there. So, I mean, obviously, I'm a if you're able to do it, I'm a big fan of the TFSA that are out there. And the reason why is because anything that's generated within the TFSA, whether that through be through, you know, sort of buying a GIC, a bond, a mutual fund, a stock, whatever, you're not paying tax on that. So I think I'm a big fan of that. Now, certainly, if you're paying tax, then the RSP is another way to go, right? To again defer your tax to the future when you actually retire. I think I'm also a big fan of that, but I'm more so of the TFSA because I think it's one that should be used first, only because you don't have to pay tax on what you generate as investment sort of interest.
Let's look specifically at the relationship that a lot of Indigenous people, and I'm generalizing, obviously, a lot of the folks you work with, especially professional folks, this might not apply, but we do tend to come from a background, from a history, where we have a complicated relationship to money, to finances, to the mainstream economy. There's some, of course, poverty isn't very far for most Indigenous people, right? You only have to go back. Sometimes you don't have to go back at all, but in my case, you know, I only have to go back really a generation to the reserve. And, you know, I mean, you just kind of survived. And so I think we're still dealing with a lot of our inherited attitudes, historical attitudes that play out in how we think about money and wealth in both good and maybe not so good ways. How do you see all of that? And how does that relate to the work you're doing? Is this something that you're working on at the AFOA Canada, coming to terms with that history?
Yeah, I think, like, first of all, you know, the Financial Consumer Agency of Canada, they undertake these capability surveys, right? And one thing that they've clearly found is, you know, as Indigenous people, like, overall Canadians' knowledge of financial literacy and acumen and capability is low. However, for Indigenous people, it's lower, right? And the question becomes why, which is certainly the point that you're making. I think, you know, coming out of the reserve system, coming out of the residential school system and that kind of thing, we've had a, we've never, the idea of these financial literacy, financial sort of concepts are, can be a bit foreign to Indigenous groups. And there's a huge spectrum on this. You can go from, you know, someone that's very, very has a high level of acumen in terms of, because they work in those fields, you know, Indigenous people that work in the fields of investment, to people who, you know, have a very, very basic level of understanding. And, you know, in our last conference that we had here in Vancouver, there was actually a lady that spoke about this from Australia, Amanda Young. And she used this example saying, you know, that there would be, you know, sort of these, I don't know what you would call them, sort of payday loan people or whatever, that were offering loans of, it was 40% interest, and the non-Indigenous people in Australia, their mouths would drop open, and the Indigenous people would say, well, what's interest, right? And it goes to that point, which is the vast differences in understanding in these matters, you know. And I think it's an area that we could really make significant sort of improvements in overall sort of an indigenous, area, that's for sure. But I think, you know, because we came out of things like the welfare state, we're, you know, what got sort of into our whole heads at that time was you had to spend money right away, right, for the next need. And there was, you know, and it's breaking that whole cycle of that sort of thought to planning for the future. And, you know, in previous, you know, certainly well before the Canadian sort of idea of an economy came about, you know, Indigenous people thought about the future, right? I mean, that's how you did the harvesting and that kind of thing. It's just getting those concepts back to the idea of need in terms of my needs around security, housing, that kind of stuff, my needs around resiliency, which is ensuring that you plan for a rainy day, my needs around sustainability, which is ensuring that my job sort of situation, my growing my wealth over time for my family, for my community, right? I think we have to get back to that, these different types of needs that'll more resonate with our communities, right? I think I think that's sort of an area that we've really got to explore in this whole idea of financial wellness, which goes beyond just finance, but how does it affect us, our families, and our communities overall.
I interviewed Lisa Meeches, and she pointed out that there are many jobs in finance that we don't consider. Like the example she gave was Hollywood films. They need financial people. You know, you have budgets and you have all kinds of money moving around. And AFOA Canada does a lot of work to reach youth who want to go into finance and management, but just maybe need some mentoring and guidance, maybe get pointed in a certain direction. Talk about your work at AFOA Canada with youth and how that fits into the bigger picture of what you're doing.
Okay. Well, I guess first of all, we have for youth, what we do is we have a product called Dollars and Cents, and that's, it's available to any sort of grade in high school across Canada. And it looks at grades 3 and 4, grades 7 and 8, and grades 11 and 12. And the idea there is to, incrementally sort of increase your knowledge base in financial literacy concepts. So any school, whether band operating or not the band operator, can certainly get those free products from us. So we certainly do that. We also encourage the youth to join the financial management profession through our it's a scholarship program that we have with one of our corporate members who is Potash Corp. I guess now Nutrien. That's a new corporate name, and they provided we do an essay contest every year, and they come to our conference, deliver their speech, and they get a scholarship for a $5,000 scholarship that goes toward their university or college. And certainly through our charity, the Indigenous Learning Center, we also top up $1,000 for 9 individuals this past year. So we do that. We also partner with the Martin's Family Initiative and CPA Canada on the mentorship program. So CPA Canada has some mentors across Canada that work with students that are interested in sort of the accounting profession and management business sort of professions, and they mentor them through high school as well as through university and college, right? So we certainly do sort of those sort of things, I guess you could say. We're always trying to find ways to reach, I think, the youth. I think it's an area that that we certainly need to, work more at, and find ways to reach them through social media and things like that.
I think it's fair to say that there's lots of opportunities. Certainly, there's a need there to recruit and to train people who have these skills. Right. So if any young people out there are listening, there's an opportunity for sure.
Yeah. And I even I had just before Christmas, I had coffee with Rob Kirk. Right. And he was very interested in doing some type of a financial literacy seminar with a college or university that, has First Nations sort of students. So I've got them in touch with Nip Singh and our old boss there, Mike Gagne, and they're probably going to be looking at holding or hosting one in the fall this year at Nip Singh.
Excellent. So let's close with some online financial literary resources you might recommend, and maybe talk about some of the things you have at AFOA Canada and how people could get that.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, on our website, we have products there, which was obviously the dollars and cents I talked about. We also have a product on sort of retirement planning for average Canadians. So that's, a very good product in terms of planning sort of for your golden years, your retirement sort of years. The Financial Consumer Agency of Canada, they have a database that outlines a number of products that are as well in the financial literacy realm that are not just non-Indigenous. There's quite a few on there that are Indigenous from organizations that across Canada that also are working in this area, in particular like Seed Winnipeg or even our chapter, AFOA British Columbia, with their financial fitness guide, right? So these type of resources are certainly out there. It's just sort of getting, I guess, your hands on it. And the database, I think, at the Financial Consumer Agency of Canada is a good one, because we're all kind of trying to ensure we put our resources up on that database as well. Another product that we have, what I believe is there's different capability levels in financial literacy. And certainly for, I think, individuals who are, to the intermediate sort of level of financial literacy, we've also have a project with the Harvard Business School, whereby we go through investment products, which whether that be stocks, bonds, private equity, startups, and that kind of stuff, and how to generate sort of wealth for communities, and certainly it's easily, obviously applied to individuals. But the idea behind that is to again strengthen our financial capability and acumen in these areas.
Should we plug the Journal of Aboriginal Management?
Yes, the Journal of Aboriginal Management, which we produce twice a year, once on a skill development, one that supports sort of our conference. And the upcoming one here is we'll release in sort of February, March, and it's on risk management. So we're just getting all the articles, I guess, together and going to be doing a production on risk management, and then at our conference next year in Ottawa on October 2nd to the 4th at the Shaw Center. Our theme is going to be on human capital, so we'll be certainly doing a number of articles around human resources and human capital in our Journal for Aboriginal Management that supports that conference.
Excellent. Terry, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thanks, Wayne.